So, Hippogriff.
Yeah, Kaiser, what's up?
What are you doing for the Valentimes?
The Valentimes?
The Valentimes.
Oh, man, that's a good question, man. Well, let's see here. Okay, so it's like, what, on a Wednesday? It's on a hump day, if you will, right? Or is it on a Thursday?
It's definitely on a Thursday. I can never get the hang of Thursdays.
Oh, darn.
Yet, I'm sure it'll still be a hump day.
Ayo.
Ayo, Lamau.
Ayo, Lamau, got him. So let's hear my plans. I have school that day, so I'm going to go to all my classes, make sure all my friends in those classes, I wish a happy Valentine's Day. Then after that, I'm going to come home, hopefully maybe finish up any homework I have, and I don't know, I might take the evening off. I might maybe make myself some za, might make myself maybe a drink of some sort, then just slowly fall asleep to the soothing sounds of being completely
starting
alone.
Off.
Yes, that too. So, yeah. I don't know. I don't really have much planned. My sweetheart lives in a far-off land, so...
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, kind of. Well, my Valentine for Valentine's lives on, I think, a different planet, actually. Like, Canada. She's actually in Africa right now, so...
You see her in your dreams.
Yes. Sometimes. She's pretty busy.
I see.
Yeah.
You seem to resemble the protagonist of this movie, just a little bit.
Are you sure? Anyway, don't mind that. Do you have any Valentine's Day plans?
You know, I don't. I should, but I don't know. Maybe a walk in the park. Food, probably.
Food? Okay.
I don't know. Honestly.
Okay.
But I'm excited for the Valentine's. I'm sure it'll be a day.
It will be a day, much like any other.
It'll be a Thursday, and that is important.
Yes, probably. Well, sounds fun. Welcome, only listener, to Hollywood Science 2.0.5, our weekly podcast experience dedicated to taking the fiction out of science fiction movies. The following program contains a 99%+/-1% chance of spoilers, entirely correct personal opinions, incredibly strong language, and the dankest science. We aren't legally or morally responsible for the actions you take because of this podcast. You've been disclaimed.
Welcome back to Hollywood Science, your dystopian flying machine headquarters. Ich bin Kaiser Alias, your chemist, medical specialist, math magician, and celebutant boondoggle phantasma extraordinaire.
And I am Hippogriff Placeholder, house engineer, electrician, computer scientist, and rogue AC repairman and zipline enthusiast.
This week we watched Brazil.
Yes, we watched Brazil. Thank you.
So, Hippogriff.
Kaiser.
What snacks and drinks did he consume and imbibe during this movie?
See, I had some salt-free air and some government propaganda, so...
Crunchy.
Exactly.
To both of those.
Yeah. Goes down just as easily as you might expect. Not at all.
Nice.
So, Kaiser, what snacks, drinks did you consume and imbibe for this movie?
Well, I actually just watched it, so I was recovering from our French toast church.
Oh. Very nice.
Yes.
Let's see here. How about you hit me up with that brief summary of this movie?
Of course. Have you ever wanted to track a complete stranger down, confess your undying love to them, almost get crushed to death by their vehicle, accuse them of bombing a lingerie store, and then have sex with your bureaucratically dead corpse? Well, don't. Jesus Christ, what's wrong with you? All right, so here's some movie facts.
Budget, $15 million. Same budget as Minority Report.
God damn.
On the fucking nose.
It's a fucking record. I mean, whew. How many days is that then?
Many.
All of them, I would have to imagine.
Yeah. Profit, $9,947,816. Worldwide gross budget. This brings our PBR to 0.663. You're gonna need to fill out some more bureaucratic forms for this one. Sonny.
All right.
Additional movie facts. Let's hear. Robert De Niro wanted to play the role of Jack, but Terry Gilliam had already promised this role to Michael Palin. De Niro still wanted to be in the film, so he was cast as Tuttle instead. Yeah.
All right.
Let's see here. The creepy mask Michael Palin wore in the film was inspired by a similar mask Terry Gilliam's mother once gave him.
Yeah, that's fucking weird.
Right? Fucking yikes, dude.
Okay.
Yeah. The samurai sequence was originally conceived to reflect Terry Gilliam's love for Akira Kurosawa films. So, yeah. I also kind of did like the samurai. It was cool. It was weird, but cool.
Yeah, it was something.
Okay, in preparation for the role, Robert De Niro witnessed neurologists performing brain surgery because he likened his character's job to that of a brain surgeon. Yeah, well, that's pretty fucking messed up. He's an AC fucking repair person.
I mean, it's about the same. It's all ducts all the way down.
You're right. You're right. Sorry. My mistake. The first film Terry Gilliam made after officially breaking with the Monty Python troupe. However, Michael Palin does have a part in the film.
Nice.
Yeah. Body count, 25.
Is it the actual body count or is it the dream body count included?
I think it might just be the IRL body count.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Taglines. Are you ready?
You know I am.
It's only a state of mind.
We're all in it together.
It's about flights of fantasy and the nightmare of reality. Terrorist bombings and late-night shopping, true love, and creative plumbing.
Have a laugh at the horror of things to come.
Suspicion breeds confidence.
All right, well, let's get into the movie. So, ducks. Ducks are everywhere.
I can't get enough ducks.
Everything is a duct. I'm not talking those small eldritch animals that go quack, quack. I am talking ducks with a T.
Ducks.
Because apparently ducts are used not only to apparently send air around, but also to send messages. So I don't know what the hell's up with that.
Well, you see, in this world, ducting is critical and it's the end-all solution to everything.
You do have to conduct yourself in a fine manner.
Yeah. So anyway, this film kind of opens up with a fever dream, right? Does it? A lot happened in this film.
I don't really know what happened in this film, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like there's acts. It feels like it's almost just kind of like a weird stream of consciousness, but it's well done.
It's certainly something.
Yeah, anyway, in the first-ish act of the stream of consciousness, we see the SAS, or, you know, the equivalent of, like, the government super police boys breach into a home using the most tactical fire pole ever. They breach through the ceiling by sawing, like, a hole, and they drop down this portable fireman's pole, which is kinda actually cool, and they also breach through the door with explosives for a family, for this one guy.
I love it, though, because they cut a hole in the ground, and it's almost like a reverse tripod. Instead of supporting something on the top, it's supporting the pole.
Right, right.
So they can slide down.
I've seen something kind of like it. It'll be like that reverse tripod thing, except it has like wire on it and like a winch. So like if you're working down a manhole, you can actually lower someone down it. It's pretty cool. But this one is not a winch. It's a straight up fireman's pole. Telescoping fireman's pole.
Don't call me a winch. I'm not your mother.
Got him.
I'm out. F.
So yeah, tactical fire pole. I'm glad the SAS is really investing in meaningful technology.
There's explosions constantly everywhere. This is because this movie is essentially 1984, but slightly different, and that's about it.
It's 1984 and a half.
Nice. Yes. It's 1948.
Yeah, there you go.
But I think we actually talked about this in the Children of Men episode, too, which should hopefully be out before this one.
Right.
It has to be, right?
Probably.
I don't know. I'll contact our editor and see.
Good call. Good call. Let's see here. So yeah, explosions fucking everywhere, man. This is some real Blade Runner level shit, and not the new one, the old one.
Now, the main character is having lunch with his mum, because Mumsy. Of course he is.
Yes.
And the second explosion happens in the restaurant they're at. It's amazing. They throw up a barrier after a few seconds.
Oh, yes.
So they don't have to look at all the people that just exploded.
They actually did a pretty okay makeup job with having, like, blood and just people, like, kind of in shock, which was kind of crazy. I wasn't expecting that.
It was very good.
Like, all the first responders, so, like, medics and then fire people, mm-hmm. rush onto the scene, like, 20 seconds later. Then the restaurant staff runs in with, like, a little, like, changing blind
mm-hmm.
to separate the rich people from the exploded people.
So, one of my favorite things is the makeup puddle. They have people that professionally do this, mm-hmm. and specifically trauma medicine, for two things. One is Hollywood movies. The second is for first responder training.
All right.
I've done this before. You have these makeup artists who will do things like paint someone's arm as being broken and splinted, or paint their foot on sideways, or burns on the side of their face, things like that. So when the first responders go and check a building and triage people,
right,
they have to use their knowledge to deal with their different injuries.
Huh.
It was fun. I decided in one of them, I had a broken leg and third degree burns on my left side of the body.
All right.
I decided to put myself at the very top of the building, so they had to carry me all the way down. It was very good.
Nice. Well, that's actually super cool.
Yeah.
It's here. So yeah, then we fast forward a little bit. Lowry, our protagonist, is in his apartment and he wakes up from a dream, sweating bullets. Because his AC obviously doesn't work. It's 120 fucking degrees in his apartment. Because, you know, if your AC doesn't work, the heater's just going to kick on and counteract that, I guess. So anyway, he tries calling up the repair people, but obviously they're closed. But luckily for him, a rogue AC repairman intercepts his call illegally and then holds him hostage illegally. And then illegally repairs his AC unit all in the name of, hey, we're all in this together.
He was a terrorist. He was bombing people.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was one of the terrorists and he was just using this as like excuse to like get bombs in places.
I really have no idea what the hell his whole thing was. So we should actually just talk about all the times he's there.
Okay, yeah.
The first one's to patch the part of his house so that his AC's fixed. But then the central service, that's the government AC repair people,
right,
decide to come in and fuck up his house by just tearing everything apart. And then he comes back and his house is completely frozen. And they're like, hey, we've actually taken over this place because here's another form, some bullshit.
Yeah.
I don't know why they were doing this. Oh, God. This is the second time we see what's-his-face, Robert De Niro's character, Tuttle.
Yeah.
Because Tuttle, we find out, he was mistaken for another person, and that's why that random Buttle guy was killed. Yep, Buttle. Which, that's such an unfortunate last name.
Right.
And that happened because a guy hit a gigantic fly, and it temporarily messed up the printer, or whatever.
Right.
Causing a clerical error. Anyway, so this guy comes back. Why? I don't know, but he's outside of the place and he swaps the fresh air and sewage pipes.
The joke is you can do that.
And fills the central service guy's suits with shit all the way up, and it's horrifying.
I thought they were going to drown in it.
Yeah, and then their suits exploded.
Right, which I actually had a little bit of relief because it was like, oh wait, holy shit.
You had a little bit of relief.
I was relieved.
Oh boy.
Yeah, I mean, I thought this guy was just going to like murder these guys with like sewage, but no. They got lucky and their government issue equipment failed on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and then he's just like, he ziplines off into the night. He's like, wasn't that a funny prank? Got him. We're all in this together. Zipline.
And that's the end of it. That's the end of everything. You never see his character in real life again.
Right? He's just gone.
It's so fucking weird. Anyway, so what's his face has decided to become Mr. Creepy Creep. Creep Creepazoid.
Maximum Stalker.
Actually, I guess I shouldn't say quite yet.
Quite yet. Okay.
He sees the woman from his dreams and then finds out her name is Jill Layton.
Right.
And needs to find info on her. Oh yeah, some children set fire to his government vehicle and get away with it. I wouldn't worry about that. Don't worry. Yeah, and then he decides to just head back to his job and look for information on her, but it's classified and something.
Yep.
You want to talk about Furiosa and her war rig?
So he finally figures out a loophole, or at least the proper way of maybe dealing with things. So instead of just kind of like giving this lady the check and leaving and calling it a day, he's like, no, you have to sign this. Don't worry about it. Like, we don't make mistakes, except we did this one time, but don't worry about it. And then she's obviously grieving because they killed her husband and they aren't going to even give her the remains. So he anyway sees Jill, tries to run after her, and then she whips out of the building and then tries to drive off in this fucking Mad Max looking truck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not a small vehicle. This is not even like a normal size semi. This is a massive fucking truck. It almost reminded me of something like right out of Fury Road.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, Jill kind of has short hair. Her war rig is thick. It's big. And it's kind of like, I feel like it's been modified for road warfare. So, just saying.
Anyway, so this is where some shit happens and he has another dream.
Hell yeah.
He's been having this reoccurring dream where he flies around on these fake ass wings and fights some horrible, like, mask chain people. And then there's a samurai dressed in computer gear and he tries to fight it. And then the samurai goes, "Omae wa moshin deru."
Nani?
Yes, exactly. And that's great. This is a movie.
Yeah, it is.
Some weird fucking shit happens in this. Anyway, so he finally goes and gets his job at the...
Information collection?
Retrieval.
Yeah, information retrieval. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, your standard concrete building with maybe 1.5 shades of gray in the entire design. We've got some architecture vaguely reminiscent of Art Deco, but almost as if some Soviet engineer sucked all the life and fun and, you know, art out of it. So that's pretty cool. And then he gets into his shitty little office with his shitty little shared desk, shared through a wall,
mm-hmm.
shared actually by an incompetent person.
And he keeps trying to take his desk.
Right. Like, he keeps trying to slide it through the wall because I guess he deserves it, but not really. And he also has like a monitor a terminal. And yeah, he's just kind of an idiot. And he's like, "Oh, wait, hey, you want to help use the records to find a lady? Oh, well, I got to get my fingers in this pie. Let me use my computer. Computers are my forte," he said like a liar.
And he did.
Yeah, he did. Because basically he's like, "Yeah, don't worry. I'll knock when I have information." So hours, months, possibly even years roll by, and then he finally hears a knock and he gets the same exact paper he gave this incompetent brick. He's like, "Yeah, this is everything I could find." And it's obviously like just a reprinted version of whatever he gave him. And he's like, "You know what? Fuck you. Move over."
And in seconds, he finds the information he needs and the person he needs to talk to.
Right. And this guy's kind of like, "Oh, well." Like, you know how when like people like that, it's in that exact thing, like, you're like, "You know what, just move over for a second." You shove them out of the way, you get what you need, and then you just kind of look at them like, "Fuck you, dude. You wasted both my time."
And yours.
You wasted everybody's time and probably a little bit of oxygen while you're at it, so...
You incompetent slag.
Yeah. God, so, yeah. Rough.
Rough F.
If someone says computers are their forte, they're lying. That's all I gotta say.
Unless they're actually good at computers, which in case...
Which I feel like then they just wouldn't say computers are my forte. They'd try to deny it.
No, you know what they'd say?
What?
"Computers are my..."
Yes.
Because it was forte.
Forte. It was loud. I see what you did there.
It's a music joke.
Ayo. What's he do after he leaves the office?
Yeah, so then he finds Jack, his old buddy. His old buddy, old pal, who is, I guess, some kind of interrogator by the bloody apron he had when talking to one of his triplets. He's like, "Hey, all right, I trust you. Take over this file so you can go find What's-Her-Face and see what kind of trouble they're in." And also, I love that every single person is deflecting responsibility for the accident. That's how you really know it's a government position.
Oh, yeah.
But apparently by confusing Buttle and Tuttle, he accidentally killed Buttle because Buttle had a heart condition that was not in Tuttle's file.
Right.
So they interrogated and killed the wrong guy. Oops. And they had a witness to that, too. Oops.
My bad.
So Sam's like, "Hey, yeah, I'll go take care of it. That's fine, right?"
Yeah, totally. Don't worry about it.
So he takes her file, he goes down the elevator, and hey, he sees the woman of his dreams right there talking to the guy sitting at the entrance to information retrieval. And his elevator goes down beyond that, and he's like, "Well, shit." And so he's spotted by the police force down there, and he's like, "I've got my ID in my other suit," because he swapped suits, because of course he did.
Of course he did.
Then he starts running away from the police officer, because he's got to go talk to her. He gets to the top, and is like, "Oh, congrats, men. you found her, because they're all holding her at gunpoint. So he takes her and tries to flee the building. And now here's the very important part. This woman was yelling at Sam because he let the papers from the file fly everywhere. She yelled at him for not cleaning up his trash.
Right.
And her pug had a big ol' X taped over it in white paper.
Yep.
Butt tape for a
butt
pug.
Butt tape. You gotta tape pugs' buttholes. You know, if they weren't mutated to the point where they can hardly breathe, you just gotta plug up one more hole.
Yep. Have you ever seen those cat butt charms?
Oh my god, yeah.
I've not seen one in real life, but I've seen advertisements for it. Why? Who thought this was a good idea ever?
I don't even know, man.
So he gets into her vehicle and they head off to the land and she, you know, sees that he's being a complete creep. So she kicks him out of her vehicle and he holds on and, you know, does some acrobatics around the whole thing.
I'm surprised Lowe's is this agile. I mean, Jesus.
What'd you call him?
Lowe's? Lowe's? What's his name?
Lowry?
Lowry, yeah. Yeah, Sam Lowry. Our very rememberable protagonist.
I see. Incredibly rememberable, one might say.
Yes. So, yeah. I mean, he's been working an office job for his entire life. It's not like he gets outside or does anything.
Anyway, they get going, and she's like, oh, yeah, I guess you can stay in my car now. They head to her job. She talks about some things. She takes a package. She starts hauling a house on the back of her big rig.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, he's like, you gotta floor it through the checkpoint. They're gonna find us. So she doesn't want to.
Because, you know, they won't raise any suspicion or anything if they just follow the rules.
Right. So they break through the checkpoint. They start getting pursued by some police officers.
Because they broke the rules.
Right. And also a checkpoint.
Yes.
And so they do that, and that's all lovely. And then they drop a house and kill at least 4 policemen by having them explode in their vehicles and burn to death.
Right.
So that's cool, and this was just after Sam was saying how he stops the terrorists. And she's like, do you know any terrorists? And he's like, well, no, it's only my first day.
Yeah.
And then he also became a terrorist by doing just that.
So, got him.
I guess they did. So they do all that. Yeah, this is where the shit filling happens later on. Oh, a lingerie store blows up, because why not?
Yep.
Anyway, so some shit happens, and then he's about to do the dirty with her, because I guess she's madly in love with him or something now?
You know, because now that she's probably labeled a terrorist too, because it was technically her truck, and bureaucracies are unforgiving, and also, now that she doesn't have a job, she has a lot more free time on hand, so of course she's gonna bend over backwards for this actual terrorist to fall in love. It was really just a story made in a Shakespearean nightmare or dream.
I guess. I don't know. Anyway, so they're about to do the dirty, and he's like, wait, no, I've found a way to save you. So he sneaks on into Mr. Helpman's office and declares her dead. He's like, look, you're dead. And she's like, well, care for a little necrophilia? And he's like, okay. And she has the same hairstyle. She's wearing a sheer nightgown thing.
Right.
Which also is probably his mom's, and then they have sex on her bed.
Which is big yikes. I mean,
Freud certainly has things to say, I'm sure.
Freud definitely is employed now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Yeah. The way she said, like, care for a little necrophilia, I kind of wanted to vomit.
I mean, I thought it was pretty good.
I mean, it was like,
it was a good line.
It was a great line, but oh, my God.
I'd have been into it. Well, because she's bureaucratically dead, not actually dead. I know that might be hard to tell. But
I mean, I can't tell the difference. If you're bureaucratically dead, you're, I guess, literally dead to me. So sorry about that. Happy Valentine's Day.
Woo.
Yeah, ayo. God. When does the fever dream really start?
At the beginning of the movie.
Right. Okay, thank you. So at this point in the fever dream, the SAS start pursuing him. So remember how those orphans earlier on, like, burned down government property with impunity and, like, finesse? Like, whatever. Yeah, you know, hey, look, government owns this. Let's fucking destroy it. Well, the SAS just destroys every civilian property with impunity and finesse. They're like, it's in our way. It's no longer in our way.
I see.
And God, they just chase him down. They don't stop. I mean, granted, well, that's kind of their job, but...
No. You completely forgot one thing.
What?
The SAS broke into his mom's house.
Right.
And shot Jill and arrested him and then put him in the Professor X chair so that he could find all the mutants in the world.
That is right. That is how the movie ends. So the SAS break into his mom's house, step in and witness the Freudian wet dream that's going on right now, and then throw him into... Oh, God, what is it? It's like the cerebrum or something? The cortex?
It's room 101, where they show you all the rats.
Yes. But luckily, the North Irish resistance rappels down from the ceiling, shooting everybody, saving the day, and then just get him out of the torture room, where they have him listen to Britney Spears for 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
And God.
This is when the fever dream in the fever dream starts.
Right. It's fever dreamception, baby. So they're running. Robert De Niro is kind of the only resistance member to make it out of the front lobby and I guess into a public square, which he conveniently just dumps all of his like tacta gear into a tacta trash can. But unfortunately, that was the wrong move because a bunch of loose paperwork gangs up on him, is then statically clung to him, and then absorbs him for your bureaucratic energy.
Yes, he was absorbed by the system.
It was terrifying because you just see like a little newspaper stick to him and you're like, oh, that's not that bad. That might just be like a parking ticket or last week's sports section. But then next time it's a form 307, and then it's a 377 and a 420.69, and as soon he's just consumed. And then, of course, Lowry's tries to run back and they help him because he's the only competent person in this universe when it comes to paperwork. And then after he's finally filled everything out, there's nothing left.
Nothing at all.
He just died like Obi-Wan there for a second. He just faded into the ground, except instead of a dope bathrobe, he just left behind all the paperwork that needed to get filled out. So, sucks. But lucky for Lowry's, Steak Spices was saved by Jill and the Furiosa war rig. And they steal a home and drive out to the countryside where there is much less pollution, and they live a happy life for the rest of their lives.
And the only green in the entire movie.
Yes. Oh my God, yeah.
And a cow.
And a cow. But just kidding, we snap back to reality. Oops, there goes gravity. Lowe's tool section was being tortured by the one guy all along. So, GG.
Indeed. Yeah, it's certainly some kind of something.
I mean, it was the ending I really actually wanted, because he was a dick. Like,
mm-hmm.
I could have seen some redeeming factors in the beginning, but over time, he was just not that good of a person. So, whatever.
Yeah, this movie was a real weird one.
Yeah.
It didn't seem to have much cohesion, but it did absolutely represent bureaucracy, which, as we all know, is the greatest enemy.
It is. Ugh. Ring, 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 ring. Hold the phone. It's commercial time.
This week, Hollywood Science was brought to you by...
Nepotastic Pastas.
Hey, you know somebody. Why not get yourself somewhere? You got friends in high places.
You're a friend in a low place.
You might as well be in a high place if you've got friends up there.
They can drag you up to a position you're not quite qualified for. Or maybe you are.
They can raise you up another semitone or two. Get you access to all the clubs, all the bumpin' diddly boops, as the kids say.
They can help skip a few promotions and just get you right to the finish line before everybody else.
Get some higher
illegally.
Security. No, it's not illegal.
Not now.
I just happen to be Caesar's third cousin twice removed.
I happen to know somebody. Anyway, Hollywood Science now brings you Nepotastic Passes. Do you want to skip the start line? Get past the middle without trying? Because you know a guy who knows a guy? Well, look no further. We now have a way to skip right to the finish line with Nepotastic Passes. Are you qualified for a job? Do you think you're qualified for a job that you really aren't? Don't worry, we got you covered. Nepotastic Passes. Know somebody.
And that person you know is us.
Hollywood Science.
Make sure you send us a blank cashier's check if you would like to personally succeed far more in life than you normally do.
Remember, they'll know who to get the money to, and we'll know where to put you.
That's fucking bureaucratically fucking right. All right, well, let's discuss our good sciences.
Good science. I'm going to start us off with auto kitchens. Kitchens that automagically cook you food.
Mm-hmm.
These are actually a thing. Basically, now that we have better computers, a lot of these cool science fiction things can become a reality. We have 3D printers that can print food, so that's technically kind of what we're going for.
Do we?
Yeah. Yeah, we do.
Okay.
Pancake 3D printers that print pancakes and pictures.
Technically.
Chocolate, so you can print chocolate structures. But also, we are starting to get more automated kitchens. So maybe not fully automated like the 50s would have you believe, but we definitely are getting closer to that. So I'm going to say this is technically a good science.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, all right. Next up, in Lowry's dream, he has flappy wings, mechanical flappy wings that lets him chase his dreams. Which, although flappy wings don't exist because that would be stupid, jetpacks are technically a thing. Like, they aren't really a thing, but they exist. And maybe your dream is to own a jetpack. In that niche scenario, you can technically have a jetpack that would allow you to chase your dreams, but no. Flappy wings don't exist. You need to actually have engines or thrust propulsion to fly.
You're no Icarus.
Yeah, you're no Icarus, asshole. The sun already took you out before you could start. So, nice try. That's a bad science. Omnidirectional elevators actually exist. I think there's a few in Dubai or like Las Vegas or something. Anyway, they're a real thing, so that's cool. Digital menus? Yes. McDonald's, actually, or several fast food companies have implemented little, like, choose-your-own-adventure things in their lobbies, so a cashier doesn't have to deal with your dumbass as you try to order. So that's also a good science.
All right.
I guess computer interface for food delivery. See, and then pneumatic delivery systems. These have been around since ever, and I'm actually kind of happy to see them still existing because they are a really fast way to get little items and paperwork from point to point. So cool stuff. Also, technically the Hyperloop is kind of a super big version of the pneumatic delivery system, so...
You want to know something kind of amazing?
What?
So you know Mary Shelley, right?
Yes.
The author of Frankenstein?
Yeah, back I know Mary.
Oh yeah, personally.
Yeah. First name basis, actually.
God, so it was, what, the 19th century?
Yes.
This technology was rampant. So she had pipes coming to her house from all over and would regularly write her friends for hours on end, sending them things through the pneumatic delivery mail.
That's fucking fantastic.
It is.
That is amazing.
Also, Mary Shelley was fluent in four languages and yet was still called lazy by her father. So I guess what we're really trying to say here is you can never satisfy your parents' desires nor ever live up to their expectations, so you shouldn't even bother trying.
Nice. God, that's actually way cool. So I actually read that Paris was originally going to have a complete pneumatic tube system for all of its official buildings, but it never really quite got finished in time or never got finally implemented. It had like all the tubing there, but they just never turned it on.
Nice.
So yeah, pneumatic tubing systems, super fucking cool.
Oh.
And banks still use them. So anyway, good science. Kaiser, what's your science? I want to hear what you have to add.
So let me start with a Spaceballs quote.
Okay.
Fuck, even in the future, nothing works. This is a good science because I feel as technology increases, those that are capable of repairing technology can no longer do so, specifically because big corporations also don't want you to be able to do that. Fight for your right to repair.
God.
So yeah, absolutely a good science. And also, bureaucracy is the enemy of the people. If you've ever watched One Punch Man, you know that bureaucracy stops ultimate power from saving basically everything.
Right in its tracks. Just dead. Bam. Right there.
Yeah. I personally hate bureaucracy and all the forms you have to fill out all the time. All the time.
I hate it, but I secretly love it too because, see, I have this cool little trap card called Reflect. It's actually just an Uno card with the little switchy arrows on it.
I see.
Okay, when someone pisses me off, I play it, and then they get sacked with paperwork, so then they have to deal with that.
I just simply say, no you.
No you.
And it works just fine. Also a good science, how bureaucracy is the final enemy to, I would say, humanity itself.
It's the final boss.
Let's have our final thoughts.
Okay, my best science is that suck tubes are still used. My worst science is that food scoops were a thing. That was gross and bad.
Very.
Good science? Yeah, overall, I say it did age pretty well. The stylistic choices they made for the computers, I mean, I'll let that slide, but I thought it was still pretty cool. Let's see here, was it enjoyable? Yes, I actually did really like this film. It was a trip. And there was a lot going on. And again, it was just kind of the stream of consciousness. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm going to give it an 8.7 out of 10. Kaiser, what are your final thoughts?
Well, the best science is that everything is broken and takes forever to get someone to repair it. Beautiful, perfect science.
Nice.
My worst is that stalking people gets you laid. No, please don't do this thing. Ever. It's so bad. All in all, surprisingly a good science. Yeah, enjoyability. I give it a dark yellow 1. It was strange and almost directionless and a little bit hard to comprehend a lot of the time. It could have been better. For my rating, I give it a 2 out of 10. Please stop wearing shoes on your head. As always, make sure you do your own research on nepotastic passes.
Do it.
So, future plans. At this point, I don't actually have the Children of Men episode edited, but hopefully that should be out either tomorrow. It's probably going to be tomorrow. But don't worry, I will attempt to get this one by Hump Day.
Nice.
Make sure to check that out. I guess you've already checked it out if you've listened to this episode.
Right.
Quick shout out to the at least 2 people who made up the 92 listens that we got a few days ago. It was just one day.
Yeah,
it
shout
was
out
strange,
to you guys.
But, you know, go
weird
you.
Flex, but thank you.
Social media plugs. You can follow us on Twitter at HollywoodSciank. That's science without the last E. You can email me at HollywoodSciencePodcast@gmail.com or Kaiser at HollywoodScience.org. You can email Hippogriff at HollywoodScienceExperience@gmail.com or Hippogriff at HollywoodScience.org. We are on SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you illegally download podcasts. And with that, I think we're ready to sign off.
I think we are.
This is Kaiser Alias signing off.
This is Hippogriff Placeholder signing off.
And remember,
please don't watch Battlefield Earth.
Nailed it.